Hey guys, welcome to episode 3 of Berlin Startup Radio. Just a quick one this time. We're coming to the end of the year. It's very much into the Christmas season. There is a lot of Glühwein and or mulled wine, depending on where you're from, flowing around. And I thought it would be great to sit down and do a bit of a review of the year with some colleagues of mine here on the product team in Fiber. So this episode is not so much about startups and entrepreneurship, but it's more of a geek fest blowout into cool products, gadgets, things you might want to buy for Christmas, or maybe things that were cool this year or significant events that happened this year in the tech world. So I hope you enjoy whatever you're doing. Have a great holiday season. Drink plenty, eat even more, and I'll see you in the new year for another episode. Oh, just one more thing before we get into it. There's a ton of products and really cool services that we talk about in this episode. Like, really, it's insane. So make sure you go to berlinstartupradio.com, where you'll find all of the show notes, and you can get a link to every single thing that we talk about in this episode. So if you're interested, you want to read more, or if you just want to see some cool YouTube videos of drone footage, then yeah, head over to berlinstartupradio.com. So here it is. Merry Christmas. Christmas thing and talk about some end of year slash Christmas stuff, but yeah, we have Glühwein first. The only problem is what happens when we have more Glühwein. It's a good point.
That's a problem. Really nice. We'll think about it when we actually have it.
Do you use some for yourself?
Yeah, I'm not going to introduce you all, so maybe you can go around and let's start with you, Peter.
Okay, hey, I'm Peter. I'm in the product team of Fiber.
Yeah.
I'm Philip, and not surprisingly, perhaps, I'm also in the product team of Fiber.
Cool.
I'm Felix. I'm actually leading the team together with Peter. She left out.
Thanks for the additional info.
I'm Jan. I'm also part of the product team in Fiber.
Yeah, and of course, I'm Ed as well, and I also work in the product team here. So we're sat in like a semi-cozy, probably the least echoey room of our office that we could find. It's not bad. It might get a little hot, I think, after about an hour and glue.
Oh, there's windows.
Yeah, just because of the glue wine.
Yeah. So anyway, we're here to talk about, I guess, Christmas / end of year things. So I'm hoping you've all brought something to talk about. And let's start with just a random question.
I brought something, but I left it in my bag at my desk. So.
Oh, you have something physical?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you can
grab it in between.
Cool, okay. 2014, it's nearly over. If you had to say that 2014 was the year of something, what would that be for you? If you look at mobile.
Again.
Another year of mobile.
Yeah. I think that's kind of a given now, right? Well, I mean, it was the year when mobile overtook
consumption, like time spent on mobile devices overtook.
Yeah, was that
desktop?
This year?
Was it?
I think,
this
year?
I think it was last year. Actually.
Wasn't it last year?
Well, it was end of last year.
So yeah, it still counts.
You know, like in the top 10 of whatever year, like December of last year, is always counts.
It's kind of too far back to remember anyway.
Yeah.
So year of mobile.
I would say Uber. Uber, the rise and fall, and almost fall, and who knows if they're gonna fall.
It's grown a lot,
and then
using it so much.
Yeah, lately. Yeah, especially like here. Yeah, like I've always like totally missed out on the whole like Uber pop and like let's pay €2 to drive for 20 minutes to Berlin.
Mm. So last week I checked my credit card statements, and then I saw how much I was actually using Uber, because it's I pay a lot through PayPal, and they only make a deduction once. Because Uber I use directly with my credit card. So for every ride I have one transaction on there. And I have so many rides, and there's nothing in between, like no purchase or anything. There's days where I've used it twice or three times or so. And I think for about a week or so I use it almost every evening to go back from the office for like a euro.
Yeah.
And no, Peter and I, shared one.
You were sitting here waiting for an Uber Pop to be available, having your phone open for half an hour.
Yeah, because using it to go back from work is one of the few instances where you can actually use it, because you're not dependent on someone being available right away. I just put the phone next to my computer and wait for someone to be available, and then I go.
You just like kind of wait for the traffic to die down, and then you wait for something to come by. It's like with Drive Now and Car2Go, it's the same thing. You're basically, you're stuck wherever you are until something becomes available. That's not, that's not, you know, one kilometer away.
And you're ready to wait 17 minutes for them
to come. I think it's worth it to take 5 minutes. The good thing about Uber is that, like, even if you probably sum up all the charges in a credit card, it's like 30 euros for like 2 months of usage or something.
Not even.
I mean, so I did it once to go to the office, and I think I was running late or something. I was like, oh crap, I'm going to take an Uber. Gonna get there super quick, and it actually took me longer than the Uber would take anyway.
I don't know if everyone's aware of that. Actually, I think a lot of people don't even know that Uber is so ridiculously cheap right now.
Yeah, but you're not meant to tell people.
But now it's over anyway. Like the Bonanza is gone.
Because I really like the system, so I think people should know about it. But now you can only use it on the weekend.
Actually, the higher the chances that it will actually stick, and there's going to be like a critical mass of people using it, and maybe then the whole legislation thing will be different. If it's like 5 geeks using it, it's probably not much of a big deal, but if everyone using it...
Yeah, but so do you think, you really think they'll succeed in all of these crazy...
I don't know. I think that's the problem, because like as long as like, you know, 5 geeks were using it, like, you know, the whole taxi like cartel was like, yeah, who cares, right? Yeah. But now it's like, now they're really putting up a fight, and they have the law on their side, you know, usually.
Well, they hired lobbyists and things.
Yeah, that's true. And there's like, you know, like there's a lot of regulations and whatnot. Like especially in Italy, there was like a couple of years ago, there was like taxi drivers that were protesting against an attempt by the government to even like open the taxi market. Like, you know, taxi licenses were sold for €500,000. And of course, they don't want anything to get into the market and not eliminate that market like Uber. I think there's going to be like even more fights and you know, like difficulties.
Did any of you have like a super shitty experience with Uber?
No. I mean, only once we had a really small car back from the product dinner at the Ethiopian restaurant. It was a really tiny car, but then one other occasion I was driving in a 5 Series BMW, which you would also never have as a taxi anymore.
Mm. I was in London this weekend, and I made the mistake of taking an Uber and kind of just automatically thinking, oh, I need to get to this place, let's just take an Uber.
It's not as cheap.
I was like completely slapped across the face with a huge... bill just for going like
how much was
the city? It was like £25 or something.
So is it more expensive than a taxi in London?
Well, I don't know. It's been a while since I got a black cab in London. I think it's more. Yeah, I think it's more. But it depends on a bunch of things, because I think the pricing kind of scheme for the black cabs is a bit different.
Yeah, but was there like Uber Pop you used, or like the normal Uber?
So this is the other thing that totally confused me. They don't have Uber Pop in London.
Oh, okay.
There's Uber X.
I mean, that's one thing I don't really understand. Like, what's the real difference between Uber Pop and Uber X? Because it's the same thing at the end. I mean, when you take an Uber X in the US, it is people driving their own cars, and here it's called Uber Pop for... some reason.
Maybe so, there's a minimum size or only
length of the name,
types of cars that you can use for that. I don't know.
Yeah.
But there's no Uber X anywhere else in Europe than in the UK. So.
Okay. Yeah. Strange. It must just be a naming thing, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe there's like in the UK and the US, and then they decided Uber X. I don't know. Maybe not a pronounceable. Maybe just like.
Yeah, maybe it's the language thing.
Yeah. Okay, so we have the year of Uber. Any like high level. Crazy or big shifts in tech this year that you can think of?
I mean, EdTech is just seeing so many acquisitions.
Not here to talk about EdTech.
EdTech is moving the world.
No, but it's true in terms of acquisitions and consolidation. I mean, that's what we see because we're so close.
Yeah, of course.
It's pretty crazy at the moment.
Yeah, it's been almost on a monthly basis. There's been some big shift in terms of somebody getting acquired or... Yeah.
And lots of stuff here in Berlin. So
I mean, mobile EdTech, that is.
Surprisingly, a lot of mobile EdTech here in Berlin.
Yeah. But also like video, like hasn't like Yahoo bought this one company for like $500 million, now Facebook got this other company for $400 million.
It's probably, just
like,
it doesn't even matter what these companies are.
Yeah, it's just like video stuff. Yeah, it's just like
Brightful from Yahoo.
Yeah, something. Yeah, so it's just like, I don't know.
Flurry.
It's not only ad. So we have Amazon Prime now in Germany. There's Netflix in Germany. Whatever. All kinds of stuff coming out. Video streaming, kind of. I think even surpassing DVD rentals at some point in time.
And still, or all of them use Microsoft Zero Light as a plugin for the browser, which is
because
just,
of digital rights.
That's the worst.
with Netflix, there's a way, I think, in the latest Safari that it defaults to HTML5. They do like a B2B.
I mean, there's the same on Amazon, but then they're like, oh, if you update to the Silverlight plugin, you get better viewing experience because of some reasons.
Yeah.
It's like, nah.
They probably don't have their like highest resolutions.
Yeah, I think it's just about DRM. Like, Silverlight offers much stronger DRM protection than the rest of the technologies.
Yeah.
So.
But I think they are trying to transition away from it. I mean,
I would hope so, because Silverlight on Mac is pretty painful. But it was also a year of drones, actually, in general.
Year of drones.
That is true.
Year of near airline disasters.
Near airline disasters. Creepers with their cameras in the air and stuff like that.
Something tells me that next year, after the Christmas period, it's going to be even more crazy for that, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we're going to be Phoenix in the air over Berlin.
Yeah.
I will not have any room to fly my drone.
You'll be crashing into other
crashes. drone crashes become more common.
Yeah.
That sounds like
common occurrence.
Like a Discovery Channel TV show, The Drone Crashers.
Yeah.
Drone Crashers.
The year of the drone crashes. Drone crashes.
It's just like these teenage kids like fighting each other because they crash their drones. Yeah. So yeah, Felix, you're the kind of drone meister here.
Drone meister.
it's going to become a thing.
Yeah.
It's like a class in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, yeah, well, it sounds like the German edition of some like Borg, Borg drone.
Why not? So, I mean, what attracted you to get into drones and how did that happen?
So I basically saw a video that was shot with a drone. And that was enough. So some of my flatmates went on a sailing trip and they came back with the videos that they had shot with a drone of someone that was on the boat as well.
So footage of a boat like from off.
Yeah, and just also the coastline and everything.
Yeah.
And I was always really interested in aerial photography. I really liked to see things from the air.
Mm.
And I really liked to watch movies from this French director who did Home, for example. And he has a book about like the Earth from above and so on. And then I saw, okay, it's actually really easy to do these kind of to get that perspective using a drone. Where before, for these images, you need a helicopter or a small plane or so to take them. And now it's quite affordable. So I started looking into it, and then I got the DJI Phantom 2, which right now I think is the most popular drone for this kind of aerial filming.
DJI Phantom 2, okay. So, I mean, having done all the research, if somebody was looking to get into it, that would be what you would recommend? Or is that fairly kind of high-level drone? I mean, is there something that you could get for less money that is still worth buying?
So I didn't do that much research because I saw the footage there and I had some input from my friends that had used it. So I knew, okay, it's a good setup. And I read some articles about it and most of them recommend this as a entry level like for amateur stuff. Of course, you can get, when you look more into it, look at YouTube videos and what you can build yourself, you can easily spend up to 10,000 euros on a Hexa or octocopter. That would be even more stable, and you could put a huge gimbal for your DSLR and spend another 2,000 euros on your DSLR.
Okay.
But I think with
carry full DSLRs, those things?
Yeah, I mean, the bigger the drone gets, the bigger, you could probably theoretically carry a red cam with one of them if you make it big enough.
Yeah, well, they do. You can put a red cam below like one of those like huge octocopters, which is, then it's like, it's like $30,000 worth of
that's
equipment
insane.
Right,
I mean,
there.
Yeah. So how heavy are those things in the first place? But to carry it with a battery powered drone is ridiculous.
And when you do all the research, you end up seeing the Velocopter, which has, I think, 20 rotors or so, and you can carry a person.
Okay.
Or you can just buy a helicopter at some point.
And take your DSLR and like take pictures from that.
It's made in Germany, actually.
Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, there's also like with the DSLR, there's a lot of like professional filming studios now popping up that use drones for their like services for filming.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, it allows you to do some pretty awesome stuff that you either need a plane or a helicopter, and you can do some shots that just weren't possible before.
Yeah.
Because you can't fly a helicopter within 1 meter of a building or something like this.
Yeah, and you're starting to see in kind of, at least I see it in documentary footage and things now, even professional stuff, that this is obviously drone footage.
Yeah. I start to realize that now.
Oh, and sometimes you see the shadow of the actual thing as well.
Yeah, that's true. And talking briefly about things like the, you know, the things that this year is about, mirrorless system cameras. Like DSLRs are out. Now it's like all mirrorless system cameras, like same, you know, like chip, interchangeable lenses, much easier. Like to carry around
4/3 or
no, like whatever, like what does whatever has like Canon has or whatever, like it's the same chip. It's just like they do away with the whole like mirror mechanism, and then like something really nice comes out.
So what does it?
Well, I mean,
does it change in terms of how you
use it? I mean, there's been like the Olympus Pen already like a few years ago, which was pretty much a mirrorless DSLR.
So is 2015 the year of the death of the DSLR?
Plus the
no, I don't think so.
You mean like another year when
I've never used
DSLRs will be dead? I think that's one of the like the running jokes as well. Like people are like, yeah, DSLRs gonna be out because it's so big and so inconvenient.
Yeah.
But I still think that there's certain aspects to it that just you cannot replace with anything else at this point.
Like, yeah, but
for
shooting, like,
shooting video, so for that I don't think it's so relevant.
No.
In the end,
no.
So I've actually never had or used a DSLR really.
Mm. No, but I mean just for drones, for example, like why would people put their DSLR up there, which is like super heavy if they can just like really have like just a, you know, kind of it's a point and shoot thing. And that's, you know, kind of like lowest requirement for like cinematographers or photographers or whatever to just like buy one of these, I don't know how much it costs, like what, 1,500 euro drones and like stick a 400 euro DSLR. Like
actually the drone you can get for much less.
Okay,
so the setup, if you get a basic setup, get the Phantom 2, not the Vision, but the one without a camera, and then a gimbal, a two-axis gimbal and a GoPro, I think you're ready for probably just under 1,000 euros.
Okay, that's within like expensive gift territory.
That's like kind of like it's stuff like, I don't know, like 5 years ago, how much would have it cost to like build that? It's like probably like several thousand.
I mean, the drone itself is just 500 euros. Even the new one, I think, so 500 euros.
And of course, GoPro have been like riding this wave. They must be sitting there rubbing their hands.
And they've just released an entry-level GoPro for 125 euros.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it doesn't have crazy high resolution. I think it's 180p, 30 FPS. So what you need.
Okay.
I know not a lot of slow motion stuff, but for 125 euros,
you
have a lot of fun
there.
You go skiing or something like this.
Yeah.
I like how like full HD resolution is now just like, it's just the minimum you need. It's
no, that was
pain.
Entry level.
That's
1080p on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it's kind of crazy. Well, I mean, now there is 4K on YouTube and maybe even around 60 FPS on YouTube, actually, which is probably maybe even a bigger advancement than just like pure resolution.
Yeah, I think 60 FPS actually, it looks weird, especially like in movies and stuff. But for if you watch a soccer match and 50 FPS, that looks pretty cool. Actually, it looks really really good. Looks almost like FIFA. Which is, I don't know if that's desirable, but
it's still pretty weird. Like the Hobbit last year.
The
movie was the most extensions I've ever had. It was like The Hobbit 2 OV IMAX 3D HFS. I think that I think that was it. That was weird. That was like really took a while to get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't watch it in that version of the end.
But that was just 48 FPS.
Yeah, it was not even 50 or 60.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. But
so what's normal is 24
is the standard for
24.9
25 for NTSC or something.
No, 30 is NTSC is
really?
30.
Yeah,
like 29.95 and
right.
Like, it makes so much.
Yeah, no, it's really
once
it's like
in a while
like,
you can squeeze in the next
No, but yeah, like it really looks like more realistic, which is something that everybody says. Like you don't even want to go for that all
unless
the time.
It's like a fantasy thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
it was kind of missing the movie tamed
becomes
what you normally have. Yeah, exactly.
You kind of expect it to be a little like blurry and
it was a bit
like
similar
the,
to the daily soaps that are normally recorded with like digital cameras like already for a long time.
It looks cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It looked really strange.
Yeah. It's like the reverse of the Uncanny Valley. You know, when it like starts looking like a little bit too good but not good enough, it's weird, and now it looks too good, and that's like it's the other side of the Uncanny Valley.
It's the Uncanny
How do you call
Mountain.
It?
The Uncanny
Mountain.
And I cannot
watch
YouTube 4K on my MacBook Air. It just stops every now and then. You have this flickering.
But it maxes the CPU out?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But wait, I mean, how many pixels does that have anyway?
4,000 something by...
I mean, the MacBook has a lot less, and I think the YouTube video doesn't have 4K. It's just based on the 4K file.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it renders some lower resolution from what I would expect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think that's like full 4K.
They are sampling it to... like 1080p or something, like 2.7K.
I mean, even if you choose one 1080p in YouTube, that's not a full 1080p file. That's just the video that's based on the 1080p input.
But it's still the same number of pixels.
I think it's actually compressed.
Yeah, if you expand it out and then it becomes like a real...
If you have a screen that can actually...
Yeah. Of course, in a preview, I don't think that's the real, like... That's like downsampled. But if you expand it and you have the real screen...
But then Air doesn't even have a...
Yeah.
No, exactly. And everyone goes crazy about all these like 4K badges on tech that you buy. Like, oh, my phone can record 4K.
Yeah.
Nobody has a screen with enough pixels to play that content anyway.
Yeah.
It just uses up space on the hardware.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's the same as like full HD a few years ago. Like, I need full HD, and then you just plug, like, I need a full HD TV, and just like plug it into your like set-top box or something, and you got the crappy digital TV with like...
Yeah. Yeah.
Which looks extra. I mean, actually, it looks much worse than a standard TV. Like, if you plug in like a non-HD source into an HD TV, it just like, looks just like weird and kind of like wobbly.
Yeah,
that's true.
Okay, so let's talk about Christmas. What would be your top thing if? Well, okay, so money has to be a limit, but what would be your top thing on your Christmas list for this year for yourself, or if let's say. Because I never end up asking for these kind of things because it's always like way out of the price range that anybody would ever buy me for a present. But I usually end up just saying, you know, sod it, I'm going to treat myself after Christmas or something and like totally indulge in something that I've wanted for a long time or something that I've kind of been kind of thinking about for months. Do you guys have one of those things?
Yeah, but it's usually not limited by money.
Ah.
It's the interesting
thing. What's the limit?
It's a problem.
It's usually time.
Okay.
And for a lot of things that you always want to do, time is limited.
Yeah, of course.
Or you're afraid of doing it or something like that.
Yeah. So you're only limited by fear.
In a lot of cases, I think so.
Yeah. No, it's a good point, actually. No, I don't know. This year is strange. I don't have... I've always had, like, I am going to buy this high-end stereo, or I'm going to buy these really nice headphones that I wanted for ages. Even before that, probably some big upgrade for my gaming PC or something, but I don't know what that is this year.
But
actually.
I think like that it's kind of a general trend, and it kind of plugs into what I was, you know, I was going to talk about. So, you know, but it's like actually it's like non-material things. Like what I want is simplification. I don't want to own. I don't want to bother with like anything. I just want to use. Like I want to have Uber. I want to have like all the things I always need at the point, and then I don't want to care about it anymore.
Sure.
So that's kind of why. Yeah. Yeah,
that would be a great. That would be
exactly.
the best gift for me for Christmas would be an annual subscription to a laundry service that comes in the morning, picks up dirty laundry that I put in front of the door, and when I come back in the evening,
your neighbors will be so happy.
Yeah,
it's done. Yeah. It's ironed. I never iron anything, but I would like to have everything ironed.
Like putting your underwear.
Everything.
I know people that like iron their socks and their underwear.
Okay. I don't have anything that needs to be ironed because I hate ironing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What, even shirts?
Well,
I
have some shirts, but I never iron them. I probably bring them to a dry clean.
Okay. You do get those crazy kind of self-ironing, but...
Self-ironing. Those never fully work. It's still nice to you know, like iron your stuff. It still looks way better.
That would actually be a really cool service.
Yeah.
Because like for me, it's just these kind of chores. They're just becoming the biggest annoyance of my life.
Exactly.
It's like every weekend, I'm like, okay, I need to do this. I need to like do my laundry and iron my shirts because I do iron my shirts.
Yeah, because you're wearing shirts.
Because I'm wearing shirts, that is true. And like, you know, all the like doing groceries and going to return bottles for fun because I'm just
So that we have solved already.
Yeah.
Oh, order everything from Raver.
Yeah.
And then so they pick up the fund as well. And if you have
collected a lot of,
yeah, but only as many as you order, which doesn't make any sense at all.
That's good.
But that's how they.
It makes sense for them. It makes sense for them.
Yeah, for them yes. For us no, because we order something for a party, for example, and then you have 14 crates in your flat, and then you order something next time from them. You don't order any drinks, so that they have room to take your crates, and then they tell you, sorry, we only take as many crates as we also deliver.
In the same order.
That doesn't make a lot of sense.
So what if I have
more crates than if you're
if I have old stuff? So I already ordered like I have for like 5 crates from Rewe. Tomorrow I have my next delivery. Oh, okay. So like 2 arrive tomorrow, so I can give them 2.
Yeah.
I can give them all the ones I ordered from them.
No, maybe you're lucky and the guy will take more, but he's not supposed to.
But then you're never gonna get rid of your crates.
Exactly. Yeah. But
do you get your money back? Do you get like the fund?
Well, if you give them crates, you get fund. It's just they set it off with your bill.
But I already paid. With PayPal.
Then you paid, but you get some money back on PayPal.
Oh, okay.
We pay with PayPal.
Okay, good.
And then if you have a lot of funds, we usually put it on classified ads for a little less than the actual value of the fund. Always find someone to pick it up.
Yeah, that's something I definitely need to do as well.
That's a pretty top tip for hacking
your
bottle consumption. I never thought of that.
If you don't have so many, if you live by yourself, you can also bring it to a Späti nearby.
Mm.
But if you have a lot, then they will not accept it.
So is there some rule in Berlin that like these Späti have to take your bottles, or
so actually all of them have to take them? Like
yes.
Every single supermarket, every single shop has to take them.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I think they only have to take the one they sell.
No. They actually have to take all of them. I'm quite convinced about that. Yeah.
But the machine always spits them back. So like,
yeah, I think they have to. Then you have to do the stupid ringing the bell and asking the guy, because I think they have to.
Yeah, or you just go to Getränke Hoffmann. Just like dump everything. Which is what I need to do. I have like 5 of those IKEA bags of like Pfandflaschen in my cellar. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah.
Never get rid of them.
In your cellar.
Yeah. I just like always bring them down.
I'm always like, I'm going to return them, and they're on the way down.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're like, oh, maybe I just put it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And you just swim through your cellar.
Yeah, kind of. Every time I need to put something in, I just like, okay, take all the things out, you know, like put a thing in and put them all back in.
You just have to move to like a specialized guy who just brings you the water and the juices, and he's taking everything.
Yeah,
if you get with Rewe, it doesn't work because they take only as many crates as you order. But if you order from a specialist drinks delivery place, they will take.
All my five IKEA bags. Okay.
Like those, they usually only take the crates. I think they won't take the plastic.
Yeah, I have like single bubbles. I'm sure it's like 60 or 70 euros, and just like
yeah, I tell you, put it on
service here.
Put it on eBay.
There's an app for that.
There's eBay Kleinanzeigen for that, I guess.
Yeah, most probably. Yeah.
Put it in free and write down, okay, I'm actually...
It's actually not free?
Selling them for 50 euros or so, if you have 60 euros worth of...
But how do they know that it's 60 euros?
And they will check it when they
can. You just say, okay, this is about 60 euros worth of empty bottles. And I want 50 euros for it.
Yeah.
Just make sure a good... per hour earning comes out for the person that picks it up.
You can actually, there's like a website where you can ask for homeless people to come and pick it up, and then they get everything.
You donate the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. Donate. Which I'm actually now tempted to do, because like there's such bother.
Euros, that's a lot of space also.
Yeah, exactly. Like I gladly pay somebody 70 euros to take everything away. So I might just like, you know, just give it to people for free.
I mean, then you can just put it on the street. 10 minutes gone.
Yeah, kind of.
So back to gifts then.
Might be fine for littering though.
Yeah, probably.
Generally steering the conversation. No, I've seen a lot of. I think there's been a big rise in like subscription based gifts. Like you said, I think a lot of people see a lot of value in that. So I've seen the thing that caught my eye the other day was like this whiskey tasting subscription. I think it was on Product Hunt or something. I can't remember the name.
I'd be in for that.
It was like Flavia or Flavia.
They have something like this for beer as well.
Yeah. Mm. So this is like a thing where you can buy gift packs, or you can buy like a regular subscription, and you get like nice single malt, fairly small bottles. They put them in their own bottles, so I guess they're like probably making a ton of money on this, because they're buying this whiskey in bulk and bottling it.
Oh, is it like these razor blades chipping thing where like
it's you get concept.
That's the worst thing. Like I've seen it all over my Facebook so much, and then suddenly like they're gone. Like I've never seen it since.
Club.
But are they still there?
I mean, there was an article a few weeks back there. I think on one Medium or something, like,
yeah,
that they're just making like so much money because they're, I mean, it's not that much money as a subscription, but
yeah,
when you consider like how much it actually
cost
per manufacturer,
so cheap.
It's just like,
yeah,
wow, that's some pretty hefty margin on that. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, on razor blades, I think the margin's crazy.
Yeah, no. I mean, that's an industrial build on.
Yeah, but it depends on, like, if you're talking about like the Gillette Fusion whatever things,
yeah, I mean,
yes, of course. If you're talking about like the standard razor
like
blades,
the
then it's like the 25 cent off the shelf thing.
Yeah. Did you guys ever use like a proper razor blade?
That's on my Christmas wish list.
I used to use one. When I was younger, I used to use one.
Like the straight, like the straight,
like
the,
like
the barber blade thing.
Ah, you mean a long one?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I use one of these like round,
Hubel,
round ones.
Like a,
yeah,
whatever
yeah,
the name is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
okay.
No, like a small one into.
Yeah,
yeah.
You put a small one in, it gets bent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's on your Christmas list.
That's on my Christmas list.
But
yeah, including
a
full set.
I went to a barber who used one of those.
Oh, really?
Several.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that's like,
yeah,
actually,
and
most of
like,
the most
you,
of the older kind of,
yeah,
especially like Turkish barbers, they do that.
Yeah,
and I actually really love it.
This was in Pakistan. So
see,
the guy knew what he was doing, but it's scary. It's really scary.
Yeah,
because they do pretty fast, right? I mean,
it's but it feels
so fast,
like so good.
It's just, I mean, it's just someone with a huge blade
next to
on your neck.
But it's also, it seems to be kind of pretty popular right now.
Yeah, it's super trendy. So right now, I think there were like 3 or 4 Kickstarter campaigns
hipster
for people,
hipster,
super hipster, to get into like wet shaving using like the traditional reinvented 1920s whatever razor blades.
It is a bit hipster, like all of the beard oil that you see.
I mean, you have to get the full package, like the proper soap. You have to get the brush made out of proper hair, and you have to shave. You need like a small towel to open up your skin and this.
I mean, I would totally have somebody doing it for me, but I would be a bit scared to do it myself.
Yeah, I saw a video of like a barber that was explaining like how to do a proper wet shave, and like after it's like 10 minutes, you know, explanation and everything, the guy was interviewing us, and I said like what do you do? He was like, well, it's just use an electric razor, because like I don't have time to like give myself a wet shave every morning.
So why is there no subscription for that and for the hairdresser? I would love to have a subscription with my hairdresser. Where I pay,
where he comes,
I probably pay even a little bit more than I pay now, but I can go more often and have shorter sessions. So not go, I don't know, every 5 weeks or so to have the whole thing done, but go every 2 weeks so that it stays
so
always pretty much the same,
the
same length.
Have you asked them if that's possible?
No, I haven't, but it would be
maybe
nice.
Maybe just ask them. Maybe it's possible.
What do you want on a
maybe like
basis
nice
or so
just
for
keep
that
your
setup?
Like kind of your hairstyle all the time.
Exactly.
You want to like oscillate between the, this is a little too short, this is a little too long.
And
you never
like,
you
have 3 days in the middle and you're like, yes, this is the perfect hairstyle.
Okay, so I'm not the only one who has this thought.
Thank you very much.
Everybody's nodding right now.
Yeah. No, but it's true. Like my hairdresser told me that like if you want to come in like, you know, between like real haircuts to just like get it like thinned out and just like remove some stuff, then you can do it for like 10 bucks or something.
Yeah,
and
$10?
That's, yeah,
it's quite a lot.
I only pay like
30.
Yeah,
if you only do that every 2 weeks, it comes out almost the same as going once in 2 weeks for a full haircut.
But you stay within your comfort zone.
I would just like to skip the queue, like some kind of speedy board.
You just call up front and make an appointment.
Yeah,
that's kind of
appointments are awesome.
It's a totally backwards way of doing it.
When you go and you leave, make your next appointment already.
So
you don't run into this, it's already way too long, but now I don't have time to, or they don't have time.
Let's not go into a cheap Harvest. That's, I think that's the issue of the queue.
I know. But it kind of does the job, that's the thing.
That's,
Do you have to beep out that name later on?
Maybe
business?
I don't know. Maybe
are we advertising?
Ask
not really.
Oh, that's a good question.
No brand names.
Okay.
How many have we mentioned?
Wow.
The drone here.
Uber.
I mean, why? If it's an endorsement, why not?
Yeah, I mean, but he just told.
Ah, okay.
To
yeah.
Go there,
so maybe.
No, go there. It's
random
just
hairdresser.
It's just the next endorsement, so.
And the music there is spot on.
Spot on, exactly.
Okay. It's actually like a sub.
I always go to the beat frizzer. It also has good
beat
music. You know, it's a green one. Green to beat frizzer. They have always electronic music playing. Or
okay.
I would get crazy if I had to work there the whole day.
Yeah.
So actually, a subscription service that is on my list for Christmas is Coffee Circle, to get a subscription for freshly roasted coffee beans, where they ship. Like I think you can choose like every 2, 4, 6, or 8 weeks, and then the amount of coffee beans, if it's like randomly picked or if it's a specific type of beans, and they ship it to you.
Mm. Did you look at different ones? Because there's actually a lot right now.
I just use them because they're for me like the standard Berlin-based coffee roasting.
Okay.
Subscription
there
company.
Was another one. I mean, they stopped now, but was it Cafe Bitter?
Cafe Bitter, yeah.
I don't know. I see a lot of them. Maybe they're not all in Berlin, but
well,
yeah.
Are they do they have their own beans, or are they taking them from like some other roastery?
Actually, I think they roast them themselves.
Okay.
I'm not 100%. I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Grow them in their backyard.
And they're completely branded with their own branding, everything. So I think they just
So nobody would take from like Bonanza or something.
No. I think they do it on their own.
Cool.
More brand system.
Any other gifts? Any other stuff that's on your list this year? Or
in the expensive range?
Yeah, go on. Let's go crazy.
So I have my espresso machine on my list.
Okay.
I really want to have a proper espresso machine at home, not some like €200 Krups one button, not a Nescafe capsule, whatever thing, and not like a €150 a single portafilter cheap knockoff. Made out of plastic. I want to have a proper dual boiler system at home, doing proper espresso, proper milk foaming, and that kind of starts somewhere at €1,500.
Okay.
If you're getting serious. Yeah.
Is there like a particular brand at that price range that's good?
Yeah, so like I've talked to a couple of coffee machine shop owners, and the one I'm looking for right now is the BFC Ela. It's kind of an entry level machine that it has like a dual system, so you don't have to, like, single system means you kind of have to wait between heating up for coffee, like for espresso, and heating up for milk. Dual system means you can kind of switch between them without too much waiting time.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an entry-level machine there that they have really good experiences
with.
Because
these are made at different temperatures, these two.
They're also made at different temperatures, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess if you use all the heat making your espresso, then you have to wait for it to heat up again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. Then the like next level is to have a different pump that starts at like 2,000 or so. So it's less noisy, it's faster to heat up, but that's kind of... Yeah.
I guess that at some point it becomes less about the quality of the coffee and more about the fact that the machine can kick out like a ton of...
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I don't have a coffee shop in my home apartment and I don't have...
That's surprising.
I don't have 8 people at home drinking coffee every day,
yeah.
So it has to be enough for me and my wife and... The friends on the weekend, but that's kind of it, and then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I struggle to justify having something really nice when I really don't drink a lot of coffee at home, mainly because I come to the office in the morning, I usually postpone my first coffee until I get here at least, and then at the weekend, so I would make one if it was there, but then it's just a weekend thing, and spending a lot of money on a weekend thing is...
But after this conversation, now I know how girls must feel when people talk about like computers. double steam, triple system, does this and here in 2000 and of extra pump.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay,
so
I just want to navigate Facebook. Just like give me something.
So you're not a coffee connoisseur?
No, actually not. Well, I mean, I know that the one here in Uff is pretty good. So
Yeah, I know.
I heard it from the source.
So I mean, that's the thing. I've organized the one for the office here. I'll really like doing it, but I don't really have a proper machine at home. I'm kind of error pressing my way through life at the moment, and that's not enough for me.
It's not so bad.
No, it's okay. It's fine. I do everything I can to get good coffee at home. I look at like the temperature of the water. I have good beans at home. I mean, AeroPress produces really good coffee, but I just want to have more. So,
I would love to just have a nice filter thing to make a pour over coffee. It's something that I've not tried before, but there's a lot of really good like pour over filter coffee in Berlin.
Actually not that expensive. Like you can get
standard
Chemex sets maybe not a couple of bucks, but you don't have to pay a lot.
It's true. The only thing is then I think it becomes a lot more about the quality of the beans because you really taste the beans.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Yeah.
Then you need to kind of invest in that. But
then you have to grind them freshly. You have a proper grinder for that. They are actually pretty expensive. So
how expensive are they? I just like bought one because I in mistake. I still have like a mocha, like an Italian way. You know, like as I am, just like that's the way. But then I got
it's
like usually I just like get already grinded coffee, and I actually ordered from Rewe, who substituted my order from like grinded coffee to ungrinded coffee, like a whole like kilogram of,
sometimes really
of like entire beans. I said, okay, let's buy like a coffee grinder from Amazon for like $10.
Yeah, that's not a grinder.
What is that?
So
it's a chopper.
Like, it's a chopper, exactly.
Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a blade grinder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
You can do that, but it's, it will not really result.
Yeah.
Exactly. You get a manual one.
There are also good manual ones for like 40, 50, 60, but that takes a while to actually grind.
I mean, it's a nice, so a friend of mine has this, yeah. And it's kind of a nice ritual when you make yourself a coffee and you manually grind the beans, takes some time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then you pour over coffee.
Like that sounds really like nice. Shaving.
Almost like a ceremony.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and then like, same with the AeroPress, that's a whole kind of ceremony in the morning, but it will also be the same with the proper espresso machine, with steaming the milk and whatever, so it's kind of a ceremony. It's kind of my cigarette break here. I don't smoke, but I do coffee breaks in between. So like the whole ritual of going there and doing the espresso and the milk and trying to get some kind of rose or farn or whatever into my milk as latte art. That's for me the coffee break.
Are you gonna get a coffee machine where you have to use special water?
No. Tap water.
Direct from the spring.
No.
A friend of mine that you also know has that setup. So he buys special water from the shop where he also bought the coffee machine.
Oh, okay.
To use it with the coffee machine. I don't know if it's to keep it more clean or to.
Yeah, I guess so.
Taste. Water in Berlin is actually pretty terrible for all appliances in which you have to pour water. Because it's really
It's hard, right?
It's really hard. I mean, it's like always everything is just like covered in this like.
We filter all the water that goes into our coffee machine.
Yeah, it makes sense.
With the Brita filter.
Yeah. Okay. But actually,
if you exchange the filters quite often, then it's fine.
Yeah, you have to do it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
But that's a much bigger deal with tea to have like good water because obviously it's a much more delicate taste. And if you compare, if you have a really nice tea that's made with tap water compared to mineral water or something, you can see the difference in color as well. I saw this recently on the web.
Do you do your tea with like mineral water? Like just like a bottle of or
no, not really. I would filter it with a Brita, but to buy mineral water. Yeah.
We're talking about like 2,000 euro pumps for a coffee machine.
Subscription service for tea water.
For water.
Well,
tea
water. Water.
That's the first rule thing, definitely. Yeah. I'm having my water delivered just for my coffee.
Actually, I don't know if that's a. I think this is also
a rose problem.
It's a very
interesting
very good point there.
Best thing you bought throughout the whole year? What was the best investment that you made?
My new iPhone.
New iPhone?
Yeah.
Damn it, you stole mine.
iPad.
No, for sure.
Okay.
My iPad. Mini. Yeah.
Okay.
Mine is ultralight tracking equipment. There's some crazy stuff out there. So I went on a longer hike this year and I had problems with my knees before. So I decided, this time I'm going to get rid of 5 to 10 kilos of my pack. And I managed to. I went for 7 days with food under 12 kilos with food and water for 7 days.
Okay.
So not water for all the 7 days.
Yeah.
But did you have the water delivered? Was it like a special?
Drone delivery.
Drone delivery right there.
Yeah. No, but seriously, I mean, you can get sleeping bags in the 300 gram range that lasts, go down to like 1 degree Celsius comfort temperature. Sleeping mat, 300 grams, it's crazy.
Yeah. So I guess that wasn't one thing that really made the difference there. It's like optimization across your whole kit that you...
Yeah, but you start with the big stuff. So the sleeping system, shelter system, tent, tent, mat, and sleeping bag.
Mm.
And then the pack itself make the biggest difference and everything from there. Then you can look at clothes. You can find probably cut off 50% of all the clothing. And then everything from there is really small improvements.
Mm. Did you take that crazy underwear that you kind of just dip it in the street?
You don't have to answer that question.
Can I remain silent? Talking about my underwear.
Did you have that crazy, overpriced, totally awkward, weird underwear? Did you buy that?
did you just take like one change of clothes, or like you could easily wash and then like dry out? I've seen underwear like this.
Yeah. So we took very, very few clothes.
Yeah. Okay.
But I didn't have any crazy underwear.
Okay. Fine.
Wait, pretty normal. Okay,
I'm not gonna go there.
Please don't go there.
So we have your kit lining stuff. We have an iPad mini.
Yeah.
Okay. Any reason why in particular?
I mean, so I just wanted to get an the actual motivation is I just want to get an iOS device because I was using Android from before. And I didn't have like such high expectations for an iPad. It was just like, well, I just want to get a small tablet as a content consumption device.
Mm.
And I fell in love with it from the first moment. Like, it's just so convenient to use it. Like, you know, the time when I was sitting on my couch with my like laptop on my lap doing something, it's just like, it's now I realize how inconvenient it was. Like, now it's just so nice to like do everything from the iPad, and like I don't even have to like open my laptop when I go get home from work.
Yeah.
So I really love it. It's like, it's a perfect companion device for me, like size wise and everything. I mean, the only thing I regret is that I bought it before the new one was released.
Yeah. And the price has dropped quite dramatically.
Well, the price has dropped, and the thing is, I mean, it's also, it's a first world problem maybe, but since the new one has a Touch ID, I kind of like, now it's like, I hate when I'm buying some app to just like, you know, put my iTunes password in there and things like that.
Yeah.
But honestly, it was great. And I got it with the full Apple Store experience in Palo Alto, which was also like a very nice symbolic
fanboy.
And it got you hooked on iOS. You have an iPhone.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it definitely. Well, I wouldn't see that as a reason. I just wanted to try an iPhone. But
for me, it was the year of coming back to iOS after quite a few years of having an Android device. And yeah, I figured it was about time to come back and see if all those things that really annoyed me before were actually fixed. And probably in the most cases, it is. Like, it's a completely different OS to, I don't know what it would be when I left. It was like early iPhone 4 era, so...
So six.
Six or something. Like that. Yeah. But back then, there were a ton of things that just annoyed me. And at that point, the advantages of Android were like... The few ones that there were really, really big. So like the intent system and inter-app sharing and things like that were just like really light years away from what iOS was at that point. So
still not that much better yet. I mean, there's the capabilities or the potential, but it's definitely not there yet.
Yeah, but at least it's there. That's the thing. Like, it's, you can do it, and it's better than it was. But
if they let you do it.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, honestly, like, I think from hardware perspective, like the iPhone 6 is just like a fantastic device. It's just, for me, it's like, it's such a nice thing to play with and to use. Like, it just feels so nice, like well built and just like so solid.
You just had like an old crappy plastic Android device.
Well, I mean, I had an Nexus 4. I mean, I think the Nexus 4 when I bought it, I think it was a pretty top device. Like, if you compare it to all the Samsungs at the time, they were crappy plastic devices. The Nexus 4 was like, you know, glass back and everything. But this is just like, it feels so much.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of build quality, I totally understand. Like, apparently I'm the only Android user who's left in this run. And like, the thing is, so the Nexus 5, you know, with Lollipop, is like, it's really an amazing thing. It's so much better than with KitKat. And itself, it's just like a very cheap phone. And like, I had like the 2G, so the very first iPhone, I had that. And then I had like an iPhone 4 for a while. But my beef with iOS is just like, it's fundamental. It's not very customizable. You can't have widgets. I don't understand how you can survive in this day and age, you know, without widgets. Like, it's just, I don't know.
But you can have these widgets now, right? In the... notification center.
Yeah.
Apple calls it widgets. If you come from Android, you just get like, that's right, widgets.
Like, that's like, no, like, I just have this thing here. It's like so amazing. Yeah, and do you have this?
Look,
do you have that?
Way too small to do anything there.
No, you just read it. This is where you read it. And you have anyway.
That is where you read?
Yeah, this is where I read my...
Guys, maybe you can go outside.
Okay, whatever. No, but...
I miss widgets. There were a few that were really good. Like the Sunrise one, Sunrise Calendar. Actually, I think that was maybe it, but...
What I really miss is the concept of the separation between your home screen with like selection of apps and the rest of the app system, like the app drawer. Like, I think that's a pretty good concept because it really like gives you fast access to whatever you want. And it's like without having like the extra five screens of apps that you actually never go to. So
it's true. So what's on your home screen now that wasn't there last year? Like, what are your apps of the
Uber? But I can remove it from Uber. It's only available on weekends.
Yeah. So actually, I think like Okay, starting with the dog, I think only one thing changed. I changed my podcasting app from Castro to Overcast.
Okay.
Because I'm a heavy podcast listener. Like whenever I have time, riding my bike, public transportation, traveling, whatever, I listen to podcasts. So that's like one of my key, it's actually one of my most used apps on the phone.
Yeah.
And that changed and I really love it.
Okay. So that was from, what were the names of those again?
What, the app?
You were using...
I was using Castro.
Okay.
And I'm now using Overcast.
Okay. And Overcast, is there any particular kind of... What's like the key selling
So the key selling point for me is the smart speed feature. So
okay.
I normally listen to podcasts already in like 1.5 or 1.8 times the speed. And what smart speed does is it detects kind of gaps in conversation and just skips them.
Oh, okay.
That means it does not support live streaming of podcasts, but I never do that. I sync at home or sync at work and then listen to stuff on the way.
Yeah.
And while playing, it just skips part where like a discussion is not really flowing. So you don't have these...
That's just happened for a bunch
Exactly. So if I would now listen to this podcast myself, I will not hear this gap in conversation. Yeah. So it just saves an additional time. And as I'm listening to quite a lot of podcasts, that's super helpful because
it's
speed
reading, I guess, but for audio.
Yeah, kind of.
That's really cool. Actually, I must admit, I'm still using the Apple podcast app. I don't know why.
I think it's a good starting point, actually, like for like a casual podcast listener.
Yeah.
I'm like also using this just the one because it's more like I never really got myself into using like listening to so many podcasts.
Yeah, that's my problem I have with Feedly, like the Feedly mobile app. It's the worst. It's awesome for like after like Google what's it called,
Google Reader.
Google Reader closed down.
The
like Feedly.
Is that this year? In the world.
I don't know. Actually,
I think it was last year.
Yeah, was it? But not too early. Anyway, so Feedly is like the new reader of choice, and it has like a mobile app, and everything is very nice. But like, just like the podcast functionality is the worst. You can't. It's like YouTube. You literally can't shut off your device and it like stops playing.
Okay.
And you can't like look at your position. You can't do anything basically. And that's very sad.
Do you use podcasts on your Android device?
Well, with Feedly, like I try to. So I have like with Feedly, have like both my podcast and my kind of RSS feeds all in in one place, both on the desktop and on mobile, but it's just like the podcast just doesn't work very nicely.
So for me, I mean, especially that's why I mentioned the iPhone. So I had an iPhone before already. It's like more or less the general concept of this, like the bigger phone, bigger screen actually also led to me using my phone differently.
Mm.
So compared to last year, I now have three video streaming apps on my home screen.
Mm-hmm.
So I use Twitch a lot. For like gaming streams, I have an Amazon Instant Video, so Amazon Prime Video app on my home screen because I actually watch a couple of TV series or movies just like when I'm sitting on the couch or whatever.
Mm.
And I have Plex, like a media center companion client app to just stream stuff in my local network to my phone. Because of the larger screen, it makes a lot of fun to just consume this media now on my phone instead of like carrying around the bigger iPad or.
It's just like
I love how people. Yeah, the iPhone finally has a big screen. I'm sorry. It's just like
I mean, I still have a couple of problems with a larger screen. Like my hands are not. I mean, they are big, but not that big to cover the whole screen with my thumb.
Yeah, yeah.
But getting
it's that bit where you reach your thumb up and it nearly slides out the bottom of
Yeah, that's really annoying.
I started watching Netflix on mine and they added 1080p support now on iPhone 6, which is awesome. It looks, I mean, on this screen of this size, it looks really great.
Yeah.
If your connection is good enough, it's really, really nice. Yeah.
And I think the only other change is really is Slack. Because we started using Slack in the company as a replacement for Skype, and I'm also using it in a couple of chats with friends now. So that's kind of a centerpiece of communication. Not really replacing, like with my friends, it's not replacing WhatsApp or other means, but for all of like intercompany messaging and whatever on the go, Slack is just the go-to thing. And the app is actually pretty nice. I think like the whole experience across the web client, the Mac app. The iPhone native app, that's actually, it's like a super similar feeling, including the capabilities that I have everywhere.
Yeah.
So I really
like
that.
It kind of feels like this was also the year of Slack. Like it came from out of nowhere pretty much, and it just like replaced all the intra company communication that you had out there. Like,
especially
all
interesting.
The deep chats and everything.
Exactly.
Like, Slack. I mean, the concept is very similar, I think, but Slack
so
just like,
that is,
had something that
That is exactly, that's the amazing thing. So I think we always use Skype, and then we tried HipChat, I think we even tried Campfire, tried like two or three other chat systems, from IRC, Chatter, whatever. Like we tried all kinds of stuff. Nothing really stuck with us. But Slack, like from within 4 or 5 days, I think everyone in the technology team just moved on there and never looked back. Yeah.
And I think it works really well. I mean, I really like the experience and just the whole integration with the different services, which I think it's really, really well done. Like getting the Pivotal comments there and GitHub
all the stuff. And also the sign up is so easy. You just put your company email and you're in.
And also the tutorial experience with the Slack bot who starts a chat with you and asks you, what's your name and blah, blah. Yeah. And then kind of you learn how to use the chat system. And while doing that, you're finishing your registration.
It's one of these B2B tools that really cares about UX, which in the past I think has not been such a big thing. And I think there are other companies doing similar things now where they've realized that, so it's a B2B product, but you still got to care about your end user and you still got to create a really special user experience. And then people will, if all your employees want to use Slack, they will find a way to make use it. And that's what happened here, I think, at Fiverr, actually.
I learned that the whole company is still signed up on Slack, which sometimes can be a bit bothersome.
All engineering.
Yeah, engineering product,
That's true. What was I going to say? The thing I like most about Slack is that it's very intelligent about when it pings my phone in terms of sending me a push and when I'm on my desk and I'm active on the desktop app and it doesn't notify me. And this is something that drives me insane with Facebook Messenger, for example.
Or Skype, even Skype.
Synchronization of chats. Yeah, Skype is even worse.
Skype is really bad.
Because
whenever you sign on your phone, it downloads all the conversations.
Of the last 2 months.
New conversations. Bing, 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 bing. Okay, what's going on?
And it's it takes so much of bandwidth as well. Every time when I knew I had to leave the office, but I still want to use Skype because I was on the go, and I was okay, so an hour before I do that, I have to sign on to download the conversations that were just taking up all my bandwidth on 3G because Skype is so efficient. It's it always was 300 megabytes of text that you just download.
I never use Skype on my phone, and I literally never use Skype on my phone.
It's really like an emergency,
maybe twice a year in an emergency situation.
You can still.
I deleted it. I mean, since we have Slack, it's really, you don't need it anymore.
And I, for all the other, for everyone who's not on Slack, I just fall back to email.
I actually don't even have it on my phone anymore.
So
I just have it on my iPad because I use it to talk to my parents. But
I mean, the same thing, but not to that extent. Still, the iMessages still does not really fully get it. When I'm when I have a conversation on iMessage and I do it on my MacBook, as soon as I put the Messages app into the background, I instantly get notifications on my phone for replies to my previous messages because it's not the active window on my Mac. Yeah. Of course, I still have them on my Mac. I don't really need to, but
But it's still a lot better than Skype.
True that.
Yeah. Maybe it was also in a way the year of messaging apps, a lot of social messaging apps. It seems whereas 1 or 2 years ago it was all about social networks, the new social network is actually...
And WhatsApp acquisition was this year.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it last year?
No, it was actually this year, I think.
Huh? Yeah.
I mean, every single app on Earth now has messaging built in.
Yeah. And then you have things like Snapchat, which are also, huge. Probably slightly...
Never worked for me.
Below our generation.
I think a lot below our generation.
But talking about Snapchat, actually it was one thing I'm glad I didn't buy was Google Glass. Because I was in the US in February and some of my friends had invites for three people and I was actually considering it. But it's just it has disappeared.
Yeah.
It's just not...
Do you think they realize that it's just not a viable
product? I don't know. Yeah, I think they just overpromised way too early and then never delivered. And then had these kind of really weird Explorer program where you had to sign up for an opportunity to spend $1,500 for a consumer device, which is basically Android on a crappy hardware.
Yeah.
I don't know.
For me, it feels the whole Google approach with new tech is really mostly exploratory. I mean, they have to kind of try out these tags, see where they go in all that. I mean, they do driverless cars. Why would an advertising-based company do driverless cars? So one part is, of course, to still look attractive to applicants because, hey, with us, you can do crazy stuff in tech and engineering. Yeah. But also in the end, there's so much just exploration into technology, into algorithms, into learning, AI, whatever, and speech recognition, products like the Google Glasses are just like symptoms or like the publicly visible outcomes of some of these programs. In the end, I think it was never intended to be a super mass market, heavily used product.
But I still think they handled the whole thing wrongly. They should have maybe had like a dev kit that they they made
of it. Didn't they have a dev kit?
I think so.
Oh, yeah, they have.
Was
yeah,
like this 1500 thing, euro thing was...
It's still really, really early, right? Still not, not that... there's
I mean, same as like, okay, maybe not, but super similar, like the Oculus thing. Okay, so A, they were bought by Facebook and I'm still waiting for what they're actually going to do with it. Mm. But that kind of, that what like it was super hyped, but since then it has been like it has calmed down.
It's slowly, I mean, so yeah, I bought one. I bought into the hype, but it's slowly chugging along. There's nothing crazy happening right now. I think everyone's waiting for this kind of highly expected consumer version, which...
Ah, true, it's only DevKit.
So we're on DevKit 2 now. They've showcased like a third prototype, which I don't think they will ever sell. What is it? I think it's called Crystal Cove, which is, again, higher res, lower...
Latency.
And even better, but... Yeah, I guess they're secretly building their consumer version. I don't know. Mm. It was also, I mean, I guess it was kind of the year of VR in some ways, at least for the early adopters.
Like year of wearables. I mean, the first proper watch was started shipping.
That's
my watch. But you're not seeing it a lot. I'm really wondering if next year with the Apple Watch release that will change or not.
Actually, I think like next year, like the Apple Watch next year, then what like Nike brought out this wearable shirt for training that measures like your workouts and everything. Yeah, but still like that's kind of, for me, it's beyond prototype, but it's not really used mass market, but they're starting to do promotions for it. So that will also potentially become bigger next year.
And not to forget, I will get my weird big wrist communicator that I Kickstarter funded.
Probably 2 years ago or something.
I think it's more than a year ago.
Okay. I think we need details of this. So you backed a Kickstarter...
Yeah, I don't know the name of it.
There's a drunken Saturday, night or something.
It's actually quite big. It's almost like a phone on your wrist. It looks like one of these like Star Trek things, but even bigger than
like
what they would have.
Did you ever play Fallout?
Yeah.
The computer game.
I haven't. I haven't played
Pit Boy. It's like
the giant guy with the
maybe not that big, but it's really like a proper sized phone on your wrist and runs Android, and they make a lot of apps for it.
For Android, that's true.
They make a lot of
2.3.
They make a lot of wrist specific apps. We'll see. I get an email every week of the progress
of the delay of the production process.
And I'm joining. I'm curious to join the wrist revolution.
But it's like still, I think like the whole Apple Watch, then like all kinds of fitness tracking stuff, like the shirt I just mentioned, like the quantified self kind of. Thing coming up. I think like they're like
Apple Health.
Health Kit. And there's so much stuff where you can like track your activities, track what you're doing, track your steps, your stairs, your workouts. Like this will become just much, much more larger next year.
That's actually interesting because I don't think so. I think this trend of like this self-conscientization and all this stuff, it comes from a place of entrepreneurs that are not the average market. I think like Apple Watch will not actually be a great success because you already have like Samsung like 360, which is actually pretty good hardware. You have like a lot of like Android smartwatches which are...
Samsung one is pretty crappy. I mean, the Motorola, the first Motorola was...
Oh, the Motorola, sorry, yeah. Motorola.
The second one is the now that they're releasing now. It's like, it actually looks still quite nice. It's not like I have an strapped to my wrist.
Yeah.
And the hardware specs are also quite...
But I don't think like people are really super interested in that. Mm. Like I don't think like the average consumer that buys iPhone and like and throws is interested in how many steps they took today and like I don't know, it's just like it seems that a lot of that. No?
With the watch. So I think this for me you can already cover with the phone or with a Nike Fuel Band or something like that. I would expect that we see just some use cases with the watch that we can't even think of. right now.
You'll be looking at your watch and seeing the 98 pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. These kind of use cases.
No, but
useful stuff.
I mean, and really, I really think that like even us, we are not like the typical consumer at all. Like, you know, we're like way above average in terms of like, you know, information that we collect about the tech marketplace and what's happening and here and there and everything. But like these whole kind of like self-conscientization stuff, it just like seems like, yeah, of course, like in the Silicon Valley, entrepreneurs do that. And like the rich people are now backing that thing. Like the
actually,
people.
I think so. Yeah, of course, it's a bit of a like it's our point of view, and it's like of course tainted by who we are, what kind of people we work with and hang out with. So I'm not, of course, like next year, quantified self, Apple Watch will not be on everyone's wrist.
iPhone also took five years
to be like used by a lot and a huge amount of people. I still think it's a trend that's going on. There's so many products coming out. Like, okay, Apple Watch, okay, part of it is, and they're also promoting it, part of it as a fitness device. But of course, there will be all kinds of things that developers will come up with. Like the example they gave at when they presented the watch, you put on a route when you want to walk somewhere and kind of buzzes on your wrist if you have to go left or right as like kind of a navigational thing, or you just look it up on your screen.
Super useful.
It's like as an extension of your phone.
Yeah.
I think communication as well. I think Apple are going to do some interesting things there with their, you know, the
3D emojis.
3D emojis.
Yes. Especially. Please not.
I don't know. I think there's like still like, of course, there's like signs and portents of stuff to come, but there's like so many things that also have been like, you know, that now we don't remember even. Like, what about like 3D cinema? It was supposed to be the amazing thing of the future, and like soon everything would be. And now it's like kind of like, actually, 3D cinema sucks. Like, nobody wants to see it. So I don't know. Like, let's see how that works out with all these like, you know, wearables and like Google Glass. I think is more indicative of what will happen to Apple Watch than people probably want to.
So for you, it's already a failure.
I don't know. No, it's not
at
a failure.
Glass.
Huh? Google Glass? I think it is. And I mean, I really hope the best, you know, for Apple and Apple Watch and everything.
Because that's such a nice guy.
No, but really, I mean,
no, make sure to tell them that it's just
no, like really, like you know, the point where we start like really going towards this, like, you know, like the bionic, you know, like union between like man and machine and stuff. Like, that's awesome. That's like everybody kind of wants it, but like I don't know if it's gonna happen like so quickly and like now and everything. But I wouldn't be excited. I don't just know.
It's like, oh, that would be pretty awesome. But I still think that at the point when you like make a decision whether it's actually like you're gonna be the one that merges with the machine, people will be like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't think I want to do
that.
I
was gonna
say
a lot of people would disagree with that being awesome. I think a lot of
love the idea, but would not go forward with the execution because it's like, you know. You would like to see someone else being a half robot, but not.
But I mean, honestly, there's like a lot of people. There's a lot of people that already like implemented RFID tags in under their skin, and they can do awesome things. That is
like
open doors.
Find
like
a lot of people.
Well, a couple. No, I mean a couple. Like
yeah,
a couple
like a
that
handful.
Have made. That, yeah, but you know,
one
and
or two handfuls. What are we talking about?
No, but you know that kind of like really like do things that really would be really comfortable, like would be awesome doing. But
of course,
but like, for example, you
open
just don't need your
door.
Wallet anymore. Like, ever. You just have, like, one RFID chip that kind of contains
it's
a lot of payment information. Apple Pay. Like, do you think Apple Pay will be a big success and everybody will adopt it? I don't know. Huh?
Hey, Pay.
No, but...
Hey.
Yeah,
hand,
kind of.
Wave
like,
your hand.
No, but I mean, so I would be hey, I would be cautious hey, about this kind of, like, yeah,
I mean,
Apple Watch
so, okay,
is
so maybe
be,
not
like,
that specifically,
yeah.
But I still think it's an... it's an indicator of a trend, so
yeah.
I people like to measure their stuff, like you guys have people use it.
Not just people.
No, no, I mean,
all
also,
you.
I mean, also, I also meant for the payment. So maybe the Apple Pay with a phone on the Apple Watch is not super successful out of the gate.
Yeah.
But to move away from traditional payment systems, that's just coming.
I
mean,
first,
this is the year of PayPal friends and family. Something that now that you bring up payments, no, really. They've launched it this year, and I think a lot of people haven't noticed. Now they do a lot of advertising in Berlin as well, that you can send money for free on PayPal. And I do it all the time to friends and family. So whenever I have someone paying for dinner or so, I just send them the money right away on PayPal. And that wasn't possible before because you had to pay fees.
Yeah, it's like
but
Venmo. Venmo is actually pretty big.
To use for
Venmo, you know Venmo?
No.
It's pretty big in like in the Bay Area, and it's like kind of the same thing. You can just like pay you know, with an app, you just like, I just send you money. Like, we just put the bill in the restaurant, I send you money immediately there. Like, it's pretty cool.
It's only missing something that you can take a picture of the bill and splits it automatically.
Yeah, yeah. But there's been a lot of like peer-to-peer payment platforms, I think, this year as well. And yeah. No, I was amazed in London this weekend that I went back home and to find that I no longer even have to, well, so I can't really pay for cash for the Underground anymore because they're really phasing it out. I no longer even have to buy like an Oyster card that I top up. I now just wave my contactless debit card in front of the barrier and it takes the payment straight away and I get into the Underground and then I just wave it on the way out again. And I never even see how much I'm spending, which is genius. But
yeah, same with the Uber, where just like see all the charges at the end.
Yeah.
So they've like eliminated this middle step of having a card that you top up and use to access stuff. Now you just do it with your payment card.
I mean, here I'm using my phone now to pay for public transport completely.
Yeah, exactly. Touch
and travel, just check in when you enter and check out when you leave, and automatically you pay once a month.
Is that like NFC thing?
I think it started with an RFID based. It's actually okay. So I think that's why it's still called Touch and Travel. Back in the day. So when I was still going to like the university here, 2003, 2004, 2005, these Touch and Travel red points on blue background showed up at some of the S-Bahn stations. Yes. So I read into it. It was like a pilot program of Arcor and Motorola with a special phone and Deutsche Telekom. So you had to become a member of the pilot program. Then they gave you a special phone and then you could like actually touch your phone against these points on the S-Bahn stations. And then they to check in and to check out. And then they deducted it up from your cell phone bill at the end of the month. So that's where the name is coming from. Now they have this. Actually, it's not really looking that great, but it's super practical and super handy.
Super ugly.
You check in to the station, like a Foursquare check-in in the app. While you're riding the public transportation, you have like a QR code that you can show if you're ever like checked, if you have a ticket on the train. And when you leave the train, you check out. And at the end of the day, so I think at 3 a.m. in the morning when their cycle ends here in Berlin, they do a calculation. Okay, did he, like, was it just a short trip? Was it a normal trip? Or did he like travel so much that it's like a daily trip? So they bill you on the cheapest ticket. So if you've done like 8 times standard travel, they just bill you on the daily ticket automatically instead of billing you for like 8 single tickets.
Okay.
Something like that. That's really, really great.
The bonus that you get for using the app.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they don't do it on a monthly scope.
Yeah. And it's the app.
I've collected bills that were higher than getting a monthly ticket, for example.
Yeah. But the app is so much better than the official BVG app, which is like really bad.
What is the...
But you can only buy one ticket in the app. Which is, if you're traveling with another person that doesn't have cash, you can't buy a second ticket in the app, which is really...
But you can do it with BVG, right?
I think that you can do with the BVG app.
I used to BVG before I got the monthly ticket. Be done with it.
Touch and Travel.
Touch and Travel. I'm using the BVG app.
So it's like an official Deutsche Bahn app. You can also use it in all kinds of other public transportation systems in Germany. And you can even use it for Deutsche Bahn. If you want to go to Hamburg or Hannover, you can just...
I mean, in the beginning, you have to enable cell tower triangulation from your ISP, I was going to say, from your carrier. But it's really fast, and then that's how it gets your location.
It's not enabled by default?
Apparently not.
No. So like normally your carrier does not expose your location to app developers.
Yeah.
You have to do that. I think what they do, so it's actually using GPS for the check-ins and check-outs, but they use the carrier-provided location data to check again so that you, didn't do GPS spoofing or whatever strange things.
Okay. Fair enough. What's the best... did you guys use CityMap?
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I love it.
I switched it after... It's actually one of the items in my preparation. Like, when I use Android, I just use the Google Maps thing where you started working, like, I think late last year, you finally added FAG to the support services.
Yeah.
And it was really bad because a lot of times it was just unreliable and there was no tram going and things like that. And now with CityMapper, I'm so happy. It's just so, the user experience, like the first time I started using it, it was like, this is really complicated. Like there's like a ton of buttons and things and options, but once I got used to it, it's really convenient. And like the different options that you have, like the rain safe one, these are things that I really appreciate because it's like, it just saves me so much efforts.
And for your standard things, I mean, there's always like the bring me home, bring me to work.
Yeah.
You can like just favorite places, and then this, like, that's 90% of my usage. So I'm somewhere in the city, I want to get home.
Yeah.
And then I just bed.
Did you ever use the rain save thing? Because I really want to use it, but I just never think at the time when it's raining, oh, I should use the rain save
thing. what's the rain save thing for so an Android user?
If you want to go somewhere, they provide you a set of different routes. Obviously, mm-hmm. some of them use just trains, some use different combinations, but they have a rain save option, which calculates the best route that would keep you undercover for the most amount of time so you don't get wet. Which sounds great, right? But I just never...
I mean, it also integrates with the car sharing companies and bike sharing here in Berlin. So it also shows you how long would it take you with a bike and how much roughly would it cost you if you use the city bike service of Deutsche Bahn, for example.
Yeah.
And you can use the teleport as well.
I prefer the catapult.
Yeah, it's true.
The catapult jetpack.
These are options in there.
Yeah.
It's like the action is a little bit ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Does it have an option to no cobblestones for all the fixie and race bike?
That would be nice. No, that's not there. So the app, there's a couple of these kind of funny things in there. And the best thing is really their update notes when they release bigger updates to their app. That's you just have to read that.
It's the same with Slack.
It's just so awesome.
So hilarious. I love that. It's they just make it funny compared to otherwise minor performance improvements and UI fixes.
Yeah.
And it's very detailed release notes. We fixed the when you wanted to write something in Cyrillic and you press backspace 3 times, then the unicorn doesn't appear anymore. And things like that. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
It's very specific fixes.
I tell you what, those app developers that just put general improvements in their update notes, they can really go away.
I think the company is actually pretty young. I haven't really heard about them before.
Which one?
The City Mapper guys.
Yeah.
But they were already featured as one of the few apps on the Apple Watch screen. So they made a big impression.
Pretty huge splash.
Cool. Any other apps? I'm just looking at my.
That's one thing that I think would be good as a discussion topic. But one new thing that's kind of recent is Inbox for Gmail.
Awesome thing. I really like it.
I tried it really briefly. I don't know. I looked at it and I deleted the app.
But why? Why?
I don't know. Just I didn't.
I love it. I just.
I don't use it. I tried it, but it's not my.
You haven't tried it. No. Okay. I mean, I hate it. Actually, it's really. I kind of tried to convince myself to actually start using it, but for me, it's just so confusing. And maybe it's just the way I use my email.
What is confusing about it?
It's just so many things, and things just keep popping up and sliding. And maybe it's the material design, but it's really, really confusing, how the way it orders emails. Yeah. I use it just for my personal email, and for one of my personal emails. And that part of it is it's usually just Amazon receive, and Car2Go receive, and DriveNow receive, and
Uber receive.
Uber receive, and things like that. And I just don't really see how this actually works. Sometimes I have the feeling that important emails get lost in there rather than that it would expose them. When I once in a while I get an email from someone, from my parents or whatever, can you do this and that? Instead of exposing it because it's someone that I haven't talked to in a long time and have them on a contact list, it just gets buried in some obscure update section, and a week later I'm
how, an email, how did that person contact you? Was it via some social network, whatever?
No, it was just a direct email to my email address.
That's weird, because since I've started using it, and I really like it that it kind of orders emails per category, and it does so very well. And of course, I don't think there's nothing equivalent to Google Now, I think, for Apple. But for example, if you get an email about the flight you just bought, it just automatically gets put in your calendar. It's added to Google Now, so you have information. And I found that it really reduces the clutter in terms of notifications from my personal email, in that usually I just get Amazon, and then here, and then a newsletter there, and a special offer there, and now they're all really nicely sorted away into their categories, and what remains is actual real email, people literally just typing keys and emailing me, and that's what I get notifications now, and that's actually what I want to get. I don't give a crap about Amazon, sending, your things have been shipped. It's cool.
Damn.
And it actually tells me that now. It's just the little icon with Amazon and then shipped under it. I don't even need to. It's really cool.
That's what I mean. I'm just trying to convince myself and get myself to use it, because I believe that especially in my in this email address, I have so much crap there that I kind of can use the filtering, but I don't know if it's that it lets me learn more or something, but it just never it didn't I can't like really reap the benefits of it because it's just like it doesn't provide me enough value right now to actually use it.
Yeah, that's interesting, Michelle. I think it actually does really depend on the ecosystem that you're in. I think with the Google like OS, like Android, it really actually adds you, like, it adds probably several features that on iOS you wouldn't have, which is why I'm like surprised that everyone's like, ah, I don't see the usefulness in it. And for me, it's like, that's pretty cool.
Miss, from the Android side, I missed now all the stuff about them, you know, picking up my flights and adding them into Google Now. And now I have to do this kind of clunky thing with Passbook where I open like the EasyJet app and I get my flight and then I hit the really ugly add to Passbook button and it goes into my Passbook and I shouldn't really have to do that. Like, it should just happen.
But
really.
There is Passbook, which isn't there on Android.
Because you don't need it.
Flights, for example, are just there in Google Now. You don't have boarding passes on that.
No.
Right?
Well, but you have them in your trip category in inbox. You're just like trip, boom, and it's there.
Right? Okay. That's interesting. I haven't tried it. Actually, I didn't even know it was on iOS. So there we go. There's one thing which is kind of relevant to Christmas gifts, actually, that I've been using recently. It's just a nice little app that it's called Canopy, and it's basically like a curated layer on top of Amazon. So they hand pick really, really nice products, quite often like design oriented and kind of premium products, but they present it in a really simple way. Really, really nice. You can scroll through. They have like a trending list based on people liking stuff in this app, I guess. But they also split it into categories. If anybody ever asks me, you know, what do I want for Christmas? Which, believe it or not, my mum has just messaged me and says, "Hi Ed, what do you want for Christmas? We're running out of time."
That is in fact correct.
I browse through this thing and inevitably within 5 minutes I see something that I really want.
Do you guys know Fancy?
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's kind of similar, right?
Who built that? It's something to do with Kevin Rose or...
I don't know, but I mean, that has a lot of design products and really crazy stuff. Yeah. Sometimes but, really I, crazy
I,
stuff.
It's like, I think it's just, it's one level further than, or like one step further than Canopy, because it's really like, whatever crazy stuff, it doesn't matter if it costs like
$3,000.
$15,000.
It's kind of a bit hipster. But
it's always fancy.
And the other thing is, like, I get given Amazon vouchers as gifts sometimes, and if I just want to find something nice that I want to buy myself, then, you know, Amazon has become an absolute beast of a site to navigate through.
It's become like the Yahoo, you know, of the early. There's like so many categories, so many links, everything is like.
And they're like the worst.
Just browse Amazon.
Every time I try, I just fail. Yeah. It's like you either buy the first item that you see in the category because is the one with like highest rating, the most rating, or you lost.
Yeah.
It's like there's just so many items in every single category there.
So that's really nice. Canopy's nice. The other one for me is all about kind of personal goals and productivity, which is an app called Lyft. I think Apple featured it as like one of their...
L-Y-F-T.
Runners up.
Yeah.
No, not L-Y. It's L-I-F-T.
Okay.
But it's really simple kind of... daily coach setting. You browse from like a marketplace of goals, so it's like a centralized platform where like other people can also add these goals.
Can you watch video to get more goals?
No, there is no virtual coach.
Not yet.
But it basically revolves around like positive reinforcement. So if you've got something you want to do, I'll give you an example. One of them that I have here is get out of bed the first time my alarm goes off. Right? And this is something you browse the marketplace. This is a goal that other people have, and you can see all the other people that do this goal, and there is like a discussion around it, and people can ask questions and things. In this case, it's and you can give props to people that do it as well.
Okay. All right.
And you just flick it, you kind of swipe it when you've done it in a day.
Hmm.
You say how many times you want to achieve it during the week, and it has like a number of dots for that. And it never like makes you feel bad about not doing stuff. It just makes you feel good when you do it. And it's like really based around a lot of positive reinforcement. So, you know, telling you you're awesome, like getting like a combo of 5 days in a row for doing push-ups or, you know, something like that. And then other people can also give you props for doing these things.
So it like basically gamifies your self-development.
Yeah. But the problem I always had with that stuff is that I would get bogged down in it and then I would start to feel bad and then I would just that's it. Once I start to feel guilty,
yeah,
I would never open up.
I think that's kind of a fundamental problem in terms of like using apps for self-development, because self-development is something that is best approached like one really, really small step at a time. Right. Mm-hmm. And then like apps are actually, they just invite you to like consume and like do more and like, you know, so, and then there's kind of these two things that are probably like a little bit of at odds.
Yeah. And it's the best thing is they send me one push notification in the morning,
mm-hmm.
which is always like a slightly different message. But so the one I got this morning, it says, this is easy. Do this today.
Yeah.
This and 7 other goals. And it just kind of makes you feel like you're ready for the day and to tick off all these things. It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
And it's the only thing like that. And there's a ton of like to-do productivity apps out there. It's the only thing that I find that works for me.
Yeah.
I had the same problem with the notification for Duolingo. It's like, every time they send me a notification like at 6 p.m. I'm like, hey, you're just like 10 XP from like your daily goal. And if I didn't do that, I was just like, damn it, and I just hated it, and I stopped doing it completely, and then they stopped sending notifications, which is also nice. So they just stopped.
Okay, this guy has given up.
At that point, but yeah, it was always like, it made me feel guilty for like 20 minutes before I forgot that there was a notification, because I was just like, you don't know, I don't want to do it right now, and so it was, I don't know, I think I really kind of have the feeling that if you really want to achieve something, you just like, you should really have the willpower to do that, if you have like a kind of like a crutch that's just like pushing you forward, it's so easy to just like stop afterwards.
Yeah.
Like you have to get into it like full on, rather than being like, oh well, okay, I'm gonna do it because.
Yeah.
I would expect that if you managed to do it with one of these apps, you probably would have managed.
Yeah, exactly. Without it, but not the other way around. I think like it's just like an over reliance on like technological stuff to solve something that's
really. Another thing is how they've started to kind of monetize it now is you can hire, so let's say I do push-ups, or
you can hire people to do the push-ups for you.
You can hire, or you can pay for like a personal trainer to give you advice, like daily advice, and you have sessions with them. And it like, in terms of pricing, it totally undercuts obviously what you'd ever pay for a real personal coach or something. It's not just physical tasks as well, it's like, you know, anything from, I guess, like confidence boosting or presentation.
But is it a real coach or is it someone else in the community who then gets
qualified? They have like a showcase of all these people that exist on the platform. And you can browse and say, Jeff looks nice. I'll use him for my.
Yeah.
To do my push ups.
He looks strong.
So, yeah, I must admit I haven't done that, but it's definitely an interesting.
So that sounds a lot like Freeletics. An app that's current, I think it's actually quite high in the top grossing at the moment. It's like it's a free app that gives you like workouts and whatever, and like a plan for working out, doing sports, whatever. But you can also get a coach for I think €40 for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something. And then he will create a personalized training exercise plan for you that he will then help pushing you through.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's interesting. There's definitely a lot out there for doing that, but yeah, for me it worked. So yeah, we've been talking for about an hour and a half, which is quite a long time. Just really quickly, any like books that you recommend this year or ones that have really impacted you in some way?
I mean, The Hard Thing About Hard Things was
definitely
a really good book.
Yeah.
I really started like, I don't know about you guys, but like I really had like mixed feelings while reading it at certain points, because sometimes it's just like he just comes across as a bit of a jerk, but then just like I think that when you're reading the book, you kind of realize like, yeah, but it's just the way I think it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean,
so for me it was just like I was kind of like split, but yeah, I mean, I think that it was a pretty impressive
book. I think it's just very realistic in a lot of ways.
Exactly.
It really says, okay, sometimes it's not about making a decision about between the best and the worst option, is between the worst and a little bit less bad option is all you have. And
so I actually haven't read it. If you were to pitch it to me super quickly, like why would I want to read this?
Because it gives you a really good perspective on what it means to work in a startup, I think, or on a startup.
Yeah.
And without not glorifying, not making it sound really simple, but very realistic with very, very good and very specific examples what it's like to run a
startup life without any like glamour.
Okay.
You know, like, it's really it's really raw to an extent, because like I think the experience that he went through was, yeah, it was pretty rough, and I think that's even though he's quite successful, he had to go through like a lot of tough decisions, and it's not one of the happy, you're just gonna build it and everything's gonna be fine kind of things.
So. Okay. So mine would be a book called Creativity Inc., which is by Ed Catmull, the founder of Pixar, which is really really interesting. It's kind of him telling his story right through from when he was in the very very early days before any 3D animation existed, selling these crazy huge machines that would render like a wireframe hand or something to animation studios at the time when they were still using paintbrushes, and trying to sell this technology to Disney and to convince Disney that this was the next big thing, right through to his time working obviously with Steve Jobs, when Steve kind of bought or at least heavily invested in Pixar. So you get that slant on it as well, which is like another perspective on Steve Jobs. But then also just more in general, like how to foster creativity in like a corporate environment. And the, you know, Pixar is an amazing company, and they've gone through some pretty tough times as well. Like, it's not all been rosy for them, and they took some pretty drastic measures to try and these are guys that come to work, and a lot of them have to, like, their job is to tell a story and to kind of broadcast emotion to the world. So, you know, they have to kind of keep a view to being creative. So for me, that was really interesting, actually.
It's actually, I've not read that many books. I've read the Hard Things book. But then most of it is really like blogging, podcasting a lot.
Yeah.
I think like the only like the book that I would maybe also like put on Christmas wish list would be the What If book by Randall Munroe, the XKCD comic guy. That's like a really really great. That's, it's like fun. Small chunks of entertainment, always like a couple of pages, and the whole premise of the book is like he asked his readers of the webcomic to send in questions, like absurd, sometimes really absurd or just funny questions about like sciences, whatever. So an example would be, if all the people on the earth would jump up and down at the same time, what would happen? Or if I would throw the ball with like light speed, what would happen to the pitcher?
Yeah.
I think it's just like, it's more like what would happen in general, what would be the outcome of this?
Exactly. And that's like, and like he's like, he has worked for NASA before he kind of quit his job there and went full time into like the comic drawing on his side. So he has like a really good science background. He tries to answer them scientifically correct, but always like with like really nice, funny things along the ride.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Well, talking about Cartoonist, my favorite book of this year was actually by Scott Adams, How to Fail at Almost Everything Still Win Big.
Yeah.
That was like really, really, really good. It didn't really tell a lot of new things in terms of, you know, like self-improvement, self-development and kind of like life in general. But it just like ties a lot of things that, you know, you get from like, you know, like the 7 habits of highly successful people to, you know, like basically like dieting or whatever, or like the science of happiness, and just like ties it all very neatly together. And you're just like, yeah, that's true. Like, you know, like your personal energy, you know, has a great influence on what you do in life. And so, and even then, like, you know, what people do most in startups, in like, they fail. They fail a lot. And just like removing, for example, that, you know, kind of fear of failure is just like the thought process of going towards, like, it's not the outcome I'm working towards, but it's the system, how I work. Even in a company setting, it's not that you always do the right thing all the time. It's that you try and try and try again, because ultimately it's like in poker, like of course you can have like one bad beat and another one, but ultimately if you stay in the game and you play the game right, then, you know, statistics are on your side at some point. And you can fail, you know, 5, 6, 7 times, and you only need to win once, kind of, you know. So so that was like really, really nice. It was like, it's very, also very easily like to read. It's very nice. It doesn't have like these kind of like, you know, like messiahs, like of self-help gurus.
Yeah,
that, sure. It's always like a little bit like, so it's really amazing. I would just like, you know, I'll just like give it away like for Christmas to like a lot of people that I know that I think will like it.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. So yeah, I mean, we should probably wrap it up, but Yeah, so we're here in Fiber and we're all Fiber people, so if people want to join us, are we hiring right now? I guess we are.
Yeah, yeah.
Always.
We're always hiring. Like, especially the product team. Like, okay, so we are quite some people right now on the product team, but like we're growing in the whole company and there's always need for smart people here.
Yeah.
Matt.
And if you want to come have random conversations with Glue Iron and sitting in a tiny, sweaty office.
That's true.
Sorry, not the whole office is tiny. No, it's
actually big and airy and very nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I chose this tiny room on purpose.
Yeah.
So if people want to read more about Fiber, how do they do?
Fiber.com/jobs.
Such careers.
Yeah. Let's just go to Fiber.com and click through company
and careers. Yeah. And that's Fiber with a Y, right?
Yeah, Fiber with a Y. Yeah.
Cool. I think we're a bit too used to saying that, but
yeah.
Guys, thank you. It's been really, really fun, and I think there's some pretty cool things in this. I think I might have to split it in half. Actually, it's kind of like...
Well, there's like so many things we haven't talked about, like the Internet of Things, private space flight. Yeah. You know, there's like so much more.
Desert. We didn't hit Desert Golfing.
Desert golfing. Let's do a quick fire. If you have anything else on your list, now is the time to quickly reference it.
Monument Valley is
awesome.
Legal Simpsons House.
Scanbot.
Yeah.
Scanbot. Oh, Scanbot is amazing, actually.
Sunrise calendar.
This was the year when kind of Apple and Google's calendar kind of got beaten in a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
The European Nest, the Tado from Munich.
My Bluetooth shower speaker.
Oh, yeah, Bluetooth shower speaker.
So I've really...
The 12 euro
Bluetooth shower speakers. I cannot recommend them highly enough.
Okay,
You'll find them on Amazon because they're 12 euros.
I love the way that Nomi's mentioning Tinder or anything, but that's fine.
Yeah.
That was
last year.
Okay.
Just sneaking.
Cool. So yeah, guys, thank you very much. It's been really cool. And everybody else, thanks for listening. And see you next time.
See you
guys.
Bye.